Greetings, my friends, from upstate New York in full bloom of autumn color. It's the Duke Meister, Pastor Duke, launching today our podcast ministry. It's been in the works for a while. So grateful to Pastor John Westfall, who's been my mentor, helping me to get set up, leading me through all of this. The old dog is learning some new tricks. I sure hope to be a blessing to you. I'm guessing that most of you listening now are my Facebook friends that have come to me through these past 10 years being on the road, preaching mostly prophecy conferences around the country. And so now's the time to take this new endeavor, and I sure hope to be a blessing to you in the past. Appreciate the confidence your pastors have had in me, having me come to your churches, and hope this is just an extension of some of those visits. So for the past 7 months, our world has been turned upside down. I call my message today, COVID or not, here I come. People are asking me, Pastor Duke, well, how does all this fit together with Bible prophecy? And, you know, this past year, the answer to so many of our questions is, I don't know. Well, are we going to be able to make our trip to Israel? I don't know. Are we going to be able to make our vacation plans? I don't know. Are we going to be able to do this? Will we be locked down? Will there be a travel ban? I don't know. But in the midst of all of the unsurety that the world is throwing at us, we have an anchor for our soul, the Lord Jesus Christ. History is no mystery. This is not a series of unfortunate coinkydinks that are going down. There's an unseen hand guiding all of history. And those of us who've cheated and read the prophecies, we're not taken by surprise by any of these events that are unfolding for us in the year 2020. People are asking me, my phone's ringing, things are coming across the Facebook personal message, you know, what's up? What's up with this? What's up with this? How does it fit? And so that's going to be the topic for our little talk together this morning. And I'd begin by saying, you know, I'm an American. I lived my life in the 20th century and bleeding into the 21st century somewhat. And I'm of Hungarian descent, but I was born in America. I speak English. I think like my generation. I'm not part of the great generation. I'm kind of part of the hippie generation. And I see things through my lens, and it's not a fault, but I see things through an American lens. And I'm reminded that 7.1 billion people on the planet are not Americans. And so when I view biblical prophecy so much, and all of us who live in this country, we kind of see it through an American lens, an American evangelical lens. And so what I've really learned, I think that hits me hardest the year 2020, is what we're seeing unfold is not just an American issue. It's not a national thing. It's a global issue. It's a global pandemic. It's a global financial tragedy. And so when this stuff started all hitting the fan back in March, we're gearing up to go to Israel, and then they're starting to have a ban on travel to and from China. And then it was to Europe, and we're in constant communication with our tour guide. Is this thing going to be on? Is it going to be off? Well, it became very clear the door got slammed shut. It's a global situation. I think of the words of Jesus as he was speaking on one of the most famous sermons of all, the sermon, the Olivet Discourse, and he had broken the news to his disciples that I'm leaving. I'm here on a mission. I'm going to go across. You'll forsake me. They said, no, we won't. Yes, you will. And of course they did. I'll suffer. I'll bleed. I'll die. I'll be buried. On the third day, I'll rise again. Whoosh, right over their head. They don't get it. Because their faith has flown out the door. They're in total fear while he's in the grave, and they should have been having an Easter party preparation. But they forgot his promise, as so often we do, and they're in turmoil, unnecessary, but real. And on the morning of the third day, he kept his promise, and he rose, as he said. But as he was giving this news, he let him know that he would be departing. He's on mission. He'll fulfill his mission, and then he'll go to the Father's house. And they didn't really like that. And they asked him, when will you come again? What will be the sign of your coming? And I call these general signs. But the one that really hits us most in 2020 is the word pestilence. Jesus said that just prior to my second advent, there'll be famines, earthquakes, and pestilence. The Greek word pestilence is the word loimus. It means the disease. It's kind of a broad term. There's two primary meanings for the word loimus or pestilence. Number one is cancer, malignancies. In the time of my coming, there'll be malignancies. And of course, we just see this tragic rise of cancer in the past 75 years due to the contaminated atmosphere that we breathe, the contaminated water that we drink, and the contaminated, now genetically modified, foods that we eat. And I think perhaps the vaccines that we take and the heavy metals and the fetal tissue that we ingest into our bodies to try to stay healthy has at the root of why we are having this rash of malignancies. Famines, earthquake, pestilence, malignancies. It also can mean insects, swarming insects, which incidentally the mainstream media didn't tell you about the huge infestation of locusts throughout much of the continent of Africa this year. And of course they would use of apocalyptic proportions. Interesting, they'll drag the Bible into anything that seems to be negative. And up even into Saudi Arabia, vast swarms of locusts, but it also means diseases, and I think that's where COVID would be brought into the biblical prophetic conversation here. And it's not local, it's global, and we've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. How, and I learned as this all began to hit, the first thing that really grasped me as the suddenness of it all. And then the words of Jesus come to my mind, not only will there be famine, earthquake, pestilence, COVID-19, but he said, as the day of my appearing approaches, it will be as a woman in travail, in childbirth. The contractions start slowly and not so hard, and then as time advances, things get more intense. The contractions come harder and they come faster. And then, praise God, the time comes transition. And then through much pain and anguish, a beautiful baby is born. So shall it be in the time of my return. And 2020 made that Bible prophecy come alive like no other I've ever had. The suddenness of how things changed back when the COVID virus came to our shores. And we shut down China, we shut down Europe, we shut down the NBA. How can that be? We shut down the NCAA tournament, we shut down the schools, we shut down the restaurants, we shut down almost everything. Thank God for the non-essential workers, that hospital workers that kept things going through that most difficult time and began to learn. And then along with this virus, we have so much avalanche of information, but right along with all of the information, it seems as we look back, there was a whole lot of disinformation, perhaps lies, which brings another prophecy to my mind, 2 Timothy 3. The whole chapter Paul's given to the societal conditions of the last days, and he said, evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And so now we're all swimming in a pool of information. Most people buy into one narrative or another, and the media seems to have fostered a hatred between the two groups, anger, name-calling, and of course, that would be the work of the enemy, to divide and conquer. A divided people is a weakened people. And the divide is not just across the aisle politically. The divide is within families, within marriages, as we all drink in the COVID information that we're being flooded with, and we calculate it, we ponder it, we combobulate it in our minds, and we come to conclusions. And as I look back on my 7 months in the COVID pool, I've had my opinions change tremendously. We've seen the people that we trusted in the World Health Organization at the beginning, Dr. Fauci at the beginning, and we've seen these people who are called the experts and following the science, and then they do a 180. Hello, that doesn't give anybody a strong foundation to build their thoughts upon. And so here we are. And so the world is just filling us with unsurety, and we don't know, but that just drives me to the feet of Jesus. It just drives me to open my Bible and take another look at the prophecies that I've been teaching for nearly 50 years. Thinking back, my first sermon ever preached, one May Friday in 1974, of all places, Lucas High School, my alma mater. I had graduated and had gotten saved out of the drug culture, and the principal, Bobby Joe Wine, he always kind of liked the bad guys, and I always thought the world of Mr. Wine, and I went in to apologize to him for being a jerk, and he, I started to give my testimony, and he stopped me, and I'm thinking, oh man, he doesn't want to hear this. He's going to throw me out. And I've been drug into this office so many times before in my school days, and now I'm getting thrown out, but that's not the case at all. He goes, oh no, I'm not offended. He goes, but if you don't mind, I'd like the whole school to hear this story. And so that Friday afternoon, they set up an assembly for the next week. And in a public school, he'd go to prison for that today, had me come in to preach. I preached out of Matthew 16, 1 through 3. Oh, ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky. You know, the storm is coming today, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. So I've been kind of a Bible prophecy junkie from the very beginning. It's what I've been devoting my life to this past 10 years on the road. It's where I met so many of you. So all of a sudden, here is COVID, ready or not, here it comes. And the world was not ready for it. The world was thrown into turmoil, lockdowns across the world, and just sorting it out. And fear prevailed. I had some germophobia going on there for a while. Gloved up, masked up, put on a hat, went to the store, looked down, didn't speak to anybody, found the shelves were not as stocked as they had always been before. Couldn't get toilet paper, couldn't get yeast to make our homemade bread, couldn't find much meat. If there was meat in the thing, I'll take that meat. It doesn't matter if it's what I wanted. It's meat. Let's take it. And so America was shaken a little bit as the food supply, the chain was broken down a bit. And we got a little bit of the thoughts, perhaps what Jesus had talked about in that same verse, last part of the verse, pestilence, first part of the verse, famine. And we've been most blessed as Americans. We've not really faced famine throughout our history. I think perhaps the Dust Bowl had some pockets of hunger, but it wasn't across the nation. It wasn't across the world. It was in a very temporary, just a few years of real hardships as the Dust Bowl hit. But 2020 has been a year that the mainstream media is not going to focus too much on the huge floods in eastern and western China, kind of hitting their breadbasket. And China is suffering hugely from lack of food. And also Australia, through fires and drought, they are having a major deficit for food. This huge storm that went through the Midwest about 5 weeks ago, straight winds 100 miles an hour. Initial reports said it was a loss of up to 43% of the crop, you know, really near its time of harvest. And so the world has really been hit, and we're facing some scary times. And the words of Jesus just kind of are beaming out. There shall be famine, earthquakes, pestilence. And so we see the suddenness of all of this that came upon us this year as a woman in travail, harder and faster. And so we just on the heels, barely were we just reeling from the COVID crisis. And then there's the whole racial thing that just blew up in our country as the police officer video with his knee on the neck of Mr. Floyd there in Minneapolis, and tragic injustice. But that tragic injustice, instead of being dealt with prayer and justice, it was met with anger, hatred, and thousands of businesses burned, innocent people suffered, other innocent people suffering because another innocent person was mistreated, and just the tragedy and the confusion about all of it, and America blew up city after city. And we had riots, and you saw it. The media calls it peaceful riots, but when I saw the fires burning, the glass breaking, the lives lost, the police being attacked, didn't look like it was peaceful to me. I think Martin Luther King would roll over in his grave if he saw what was going down on that. And believe me, the evangelical community, we love black people. A huge part of the evangelical movement is black people. And so black people matter. But as I've studied out the Black Lives Matter organization, visited their webpage, read their mission statement, read the testimony of their founders and their spiritualism, conjuring up the spirits of the dead to empower them, get a little nervous with that organization. And it's permeated our world. It's divided us. There's no question. Christian white people love black people, love Asian people, love Hispanics. That's not even an issue for us. And yet we've been relegated, and we've been name called. Just heard last night on the news. Now I'm a lizard brain. I'm not even sure what that means, but it was certainly meant for evil. But we are what we are. Blessed are we when all men shall revile us and speak evil against us falsely. For so persecuted they the prophets. And those days are here, Christians. Brace yourself. Lean in hard on Jesus. Lean in deeply to your local church. Follow the leadership of your pastor and elders, and just stay close to Jesus. Stay close to one another. I don't think we really have to worry about all this stuff. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, of a sound mind. And just a little reminder, when you're sitting listening to some news that's really discouraging you and frightening you, I believe Jesus would lean over and whisper in your ear, "Fear not, I got this. I think I told you what to expect. What is happening? What is it about what you see on the news that should come as a surprise to you who have studied the prophecies?" Well, I have my Bible open to James chapter 5. We saw COVID come suddenly and hard. We saw racial unrest and rioting and division in our country, and that hasn't gone away. But we see the economic part of this. President Trump mentions often about we need to make sure that the cure is not worse than the disease. But for the past 48 years, I've been preaching from the book of James, chapter 5. It's talking about the time of the last days. And it says, "Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be witness against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasures for the last days." For the last days. It looks kind of like an economic collapse to me. Your money is now worthless. And with all these bailouts and all, and I'm not really against them, but just the reality of all this money being printed, inflation is going to just eat us up. Our money is losing its value. You have heaped treasures together for the last days, and judgment comes economically, not to just America, but to the globe. The people that have turned back to Sodom, the people that have embraced abortion, the people that whose governments are filled with fraud. He says in verse 4, "Indeed, the wages of the laborers, the worker bees, the common people like you and I, who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud. And you see the middle class kind of being taken away, falling into poverty, and all the while the rich keep getting richer. That's how the Bible said it would be in the last days, and we see that discrepancy of the rich getting richer, and they're doing it on the backs of the common people and doing it by fraud. It's behind the scenes deals. It's hidden contracts. It's making deals in the back room. It's having big chunks of money being laundered through offshore accounts. And it's all here, kept back by fraud. They cry out, and the cries of the reapers, the worker bees, you and I, has reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. And so God hears our cries. He's concerned. He told us what to expect, and now it's here. It says, verse 5, you have lived on earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You have condemned. You have murdered the just who does not even resist you. Boy, I want to stop there for a minute. You know, when people are being murdered, they try to resist. Except I think of one group who are massively murdered, mercilessly murdered, and can't even resist. The unborn, 63 million dead babies in America by choice. By choice. I read through the Old Testament, a little phrase that occurs over and over again, the blood of the infants, and the blood of the innocent cries from the soil. The blood of the innocent cries from the soil, and the Lord in heaven hears that cry. My pastor in Missouri used to say, God doesn't settle his books every 90 days, but he will settle his books. And what we're reading in the book of James, chapter 5, in the last days, is God settling his books, an economic collapse. He tells us why. Because of your fraud, because of your evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. And you're doing it on the backs of the innocents. And you've killed, you've condemned and murdered the just among you, who does not even resist you. The blood of 63 million American babies, and who knows how many worldwide abortions. God is going to settle his books, and it has begun in James chapter 5. Therefore, here's the good news. Therefore, be patient, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. When these things are happening and they're horrific, they're just a sign that his coming is so near. Therefore, be patient, brethren, in the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until he receives the early and latter rains. You know, that's close to my heart. I'm a bit of a farmer, really a gardener, a farmer wannabe, will be in God's kingdom for sure. But he uses these illustrations because this is their world. This was an agricultural world. They understood these things. And we live in a agricultural environment that's very different from the Mediterranean. We kind of get our rain just kind of through scattered through the months of the year. June, July are months that we enjoy rain. Some years I don't hardly have to water my garden at all. And this year I had to garden hard for six. I had to water hard for 6 weeks and then haven't watered since. But in the Mediterranean culture and climate, the rains come early and they have their crop harvest, and then the latter rains brings in the final harvest. And so there's a cycle that's different from what we experience here in our country. And the early and latter rains, and that final harvest it's talking about here, and this gives me hope and encourages my heart. I'll just read the next verse and go back with the illustration. He says, be patient, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. The farmer, he waits for that early and latter rains. You also be patient. Just remember, as we're facing uncertain days, we win. Jesus comes. No matter who wins the election, Jesus is still king. Hang in there. We win this thing. You also be patient, establish your hearts. That's just eyes on Jesus, hand of the plow, going deeper with the Christian community, reaching out to those that are in darkness, bringing them to the light, just that basic Christian testimony day in and day out, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. I remember as a child, we had a truck farm. I didn't even know that. I just thought I had a mean grandpa that made us work in the garden every day. And our first garden as a child was 4 acres. We had 500 tomato plants, 400 pepper plants. And it was mandatory that every day Dookie, Dougie, and Danny had to go out and do a row in the garden. And that's just weeding and picking. But then there came that day as we, in the fall, usually in September, as we're watching for that first frost, we still had lots and lots of things in the garden, the tomatoes, the peppers in particular, that can't take the frost. And we would watch the news closely, and then we'd get off that school bus, and Grandpa would be waiting for us. You know, we were Hergets, and Hergets learned to work. And he'd say, put out your hands. They're made to work. And if you learn to work, you'll never go hungry. And then he had a further financial admonition for his grandkids. And he'd say that to you. You're 5 or 6 or 7 years old. Put out your hands. They're made to work. Yeah, 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 Papa. And then he'd say, but your hands could only make so much money. You got to learn to let your money start working for you. And, of course, I had no clue what he was talking about. And then you turn about 13 or 14, then he'd give you the whole spill. Put out your hands, made to work. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't you got to make so much money. You got to let your money start working for you. Then he said, when you get smart, you'll learn to let other people's money start making for you. So he learned a little bit about investment. I was about 55 years old when I figured that part out and found out he was true. So Grandpa would be waiting for us. We get off the school bus and it's like, oh no. And we knew what was at stake. It's the final harvest. Frost is coming in tonight. So we got off the bus, had a snack, went, got into our dirty old clothes, went right out into that garden and started to harvest any melons that might still be there, every pepper that's there, green tomatoes, because you can ripen those up in the garage, and fried green tomatoes, not too shabby as well. And so we'd be out there, and of course it's getting darker a little bit earlier, and we weren't done with the harvest. We'd run in, have a very quick dinner, come right back out to that garden, and when it got dark, we usually weren't finished, and they'd get Grandpa's car, and we had two cars. The neighbors come over and just kind of put their headlamps on sections of the garden so we could see and continue picking until everything was cleaned out. Sometimes it was pretty cold when we come in, and it was dark and cold, but we would have just a whole huge harvest in our garage waiting, and of course we'd be selling that alongside the road and at my grandpa's bar. And that was the final harvest. And here we use that Jesus. Actually, it's James using that illustration in chapter 5. There's going to be a final harvest. And some of the hope that I get from that passage is thinking back to 9/11, that tragic thing that hit our country, September 11th, 2001. Remember the Sunday before 9/11, our church attendance was 763. And the Sunday after 9/11, it was 1,175. We grew by 412 people in attendance in 1 week. The Sunday after the Sunday after 9/11. And I think you can see why. People were scared. They were shaken. Lots of people kind of have faith. They kind of believe in God, and he's sort of there. They kind of got a little deal working with him, but they don't really know him. And they got scared, and they came to church. And the next week, our attendance dropped by about 200. And the next week, it dropped by about 100. And then about a month out, it was right back to kind of where it was before 9/11 happened at all. And I think what's in our face now makes 9/11 look like a Sunday school picnic. Because that was four tragedies that happened in four places in 1 day. It shut down the stock market for a day or so, but it didn't shut down any restaurants. It didn't shut down airlines for more than 24, 36 hours. And so what happened in 9/11 was so minuscule compared to what has happened this year and the economic tragedy that is there. So we're told by the prophet James, look out for this. When? in the last days. And here it is, the words of Jesus: there shall be pestilence in our face. James, there'll be economic collapse. It's here. It's in our face. And I don't believe that what we've seen is the total collapse. I'm hoping it's not. There's a puppet that lives inside of me, wants a very comfortable America, free America for my grandkids to grow up in. I'm kind of a wimp. I'm kind of a, I like my creature comforts. I like to go to the store and get what I want when I want to get it. I want to go where I want to go. I don't want any kind of restrictions. I'm not used to that. And now 2020 has changed it all. And so this pandemic has had some major implications. And I want to kind of switch gears to just the immediacy to what this might be leading to. In all of the COVID talk, we just hear the vaccine, the vaccine, the vaccine. I'm a little nervous about the vaccine. I want people to be well. We all want the same thing. We want people to be healthy, and we don't want people to die from any disease. But things are kind of different with this vaccine versus others, and I never paid a whole lot of attention to vaccines through the years, to be honest with you. I've never been one to get my flu shot. I eat healthy and I work out. I'm physically fit, and just seems to life has been good to me on that front. So I've not paid a lot of attention to vaccines. But with COVID, I think we've all kind of tuned in on that a bit. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm a very cautious vaccinator. I'd like to know what's in the vaccine. I really don't want any fetal tissue from aborted babies in anything that's ingested into my body, my loved ones' bodies, our children, grandchildren's bodies. And they don't usually tell you what is in these things. Heavy metals are pretty much always in these, and they're very toxic to our bodies. And we've been aware that there's been a lot of childhood health issues that have arisen this past 30 years, especially with this more immunizations. I think there's a tie between autism and the vaccines. There's a lot of talk about it, and there's difference of opinions. But something's causing the ADD that is so prevalent in the lives of our little children, autism, which we almost never even heard of. I wouldn't have even understood the term 20 years ago, but we all do now. And so something's changing. Is it the genetically modified food that is kind of forced upon us to allow the plants to not die with the use of plant, just losing my thought there, that's killing the herbicide that kills the plants, and so they're genetically modified to endure that. The Roundup, there it goes. Don't get old. Things slip out of the brain, and maybe that was 1969 too. I don't know, but the genetically modified grains that we eat, and even more and more vegetables, are genetically modified so that they can live up to Roundup. We just know that cancer's everywhere. We just know there's a lot of autoimmune diseases that we didn't used to have. And of course, Jesus told us what to look for. And here it is. And these are some thoughts as to why. But the thing about the vaccines that really captures me most is the RNA factor. You need to study that out. My wife is a great scholar on these things. She feeds me a lot of great information where to go to look deeper. But I think all Christian people especially should look into the RNA factor, the genetic modification that's going into the vaccines. It's of great concern to me. And then that thought, and the genetic modification. And I think of the words of Jesus when he said this, and this will be the last part of my thoughts for today. Jesus said, "As it was in the days of Noah, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be." So I go back to the days of Noah in Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, and I see things quite a bit differently now than how I was taught in Bible college and how this might be interpreted. But I see it a little bit differently now. So I have my Bible open, Genesis 6, as it Jesus said, this is what you can expect to find just before I return. There's going to be a part of this that's a little bit controversial in its interpretation, not anger, just like, what does this mean? Great people might disagree, and this isn't anything of major doctrinal fellowship. But then there's a part of this that's confusing, and there's a part of it that is not confusing at all. Here's the part. Here's what it says. Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the earth that the daughters of men were born unto them, the sons of God. Now, the sons of God is a term that is used often in the Bible for angels. And we know there's two kinds of angels. There are angels that followed God, the holy angels. And we know that one third of the angels followed Satan's deception, followed Satan's rebellion, and they were kicked out of heaven. He led one third of the stars of God in rebellion, Revelation 12, I believe it's verse 3. And they were cast to the earth, hell was prepared for the devil and his angels. Those are the fallen angels. Those are the demons. And it says that the sons of God, let's think perhaps these are demons, saw the daughters of men that they were beautiful, and they took wives and for themselves and of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And it says the results of this sexual union, whoever the sons of God are, I'm going now that the sons of God there are fallen angels. And I know we'll be as the angels, we will not procreate in heaven. Angels weren't created as a race, they were created as a host. There's no procreation with angels. God created, whammo, and they're all here. And when angels appeared on earth at Sodom, the men of Sodom saw them. They didn't know that they were angels. They thought they were men. Demons are fallen angels, and angels are always referred to in the masculine gender in the Bible, never in the feminine. But here, the sons of God, my view now is this. They're demons who inhabit totally different genetic makeup. We know everything living, plant, animal, human has DNA, and I would say that's true for angels and everything living in heaven. God's the same creator of heaven and earth. But here's the results of their union. And this was a little bit different. And the Holy Spirit points this out in Genesis 6:4. There were giants on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, they bore children to them. And those were mighty men, were of old men of renown. One thing that's for sure, that this genetic union, sons of God, daughters of men, created giants, and they created men of renown. It created mighty men. I find that really interesting. Some kind of a genetic mutation, a genetic mix. And it's so crazy when you look back to in the ancient days, whether it's the Celtics people groups in England, British Isles, the Aztecs, Incas in in the American continents, Greek mythology, Egyptian worship. You see a mingling of animals and people in their drawings. Men's bodies, falcon heads in Egypt. You have the satyr, I think it is, satyr in Greek mythology, the horse's body, a man's chest and head, a mingling of human and animal. And there's these folks, these groups, they all emerge about the same time, and they all worship the same way, and their worship pictures and how they worshiped are sort of interchangeable. They're all doing the same thing the same way. Coinkydink, or is there a message here? And so the way I interpret all this now is there was genetic something going on that had not been before Genesis 6, and it created a human species that was different from everyday people that we know today and then. And here's what's for sure. They crossed the line. whatever it was, it crossed the line of God's holiness. And he says, Noah, build an ark. And so game on. And it's interesting that Jesus would say, as it was in the days of Noah, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And this vaccine, with this RNA factor, changes the genetics. You know, human 2.0, a genetically synthesized genetic code. And when man begins to tamper with that beautiful double helix, the DNA molecule, deoxyribonucleic acid, and those little bars, those little four ribosomes across the rim there, the rungs of the ladder that are twisted, those are in God's hands. God's the author of life, and man has figured out how God did it, and man is beginning to tamper with that. And oh, they're doing it, of course, for our own good, to keep us healthy and wealthy and wise. And well, I don't care what the intentions are. I think we're crossing the line. We're tampering genetically. And the world's ready to buy it because we don't want to get COVID. We want to be safe. And I'm thinking, man, the kill rate of this, thankfully, is only is 99.9% chance that you're gonna live. The kill rate is really low, and I'm thankful for that. But now there's a vaccine with an RNA factor, a genetic thing, and that gets into our body, and it begins to take the place of our human genome. And there's patents on this, and so those patents are owned, and so we're sort of being owned. And I'll go into another podcast how all of this luciferase, that they call this illumination element in the vaccine, luciferase, Lucifer, the light giver, so that when it's in there and Bill Gates got the dot thing and they can tell that you've been vaccinated, and they're talking mandatory, which brings me to Revelation 13. We know the mark of the beast is going to be mandatory. I don't believe this vaccine is part of the mark of the beast, but it's the preparation to prepare the populace for the mark of the beast. And I'm saying, oh my goodness, Jesus is coming soon. Oh my goodness. I hate the economic collapse, but it's here. I hate the pandemic, but it's here. And the genetic things that they crossed in Genesis 6, we're not really sure exactly what that was. We're not really sure exactly what this is, but it's genetic tampering for sure. And if it is, it crosses God's line. I think that's what Jesus was talking about. But the good news is this: he told us it would be here. And so I call it the glove of prophecy, and now we're watching the hand of reality fitting in. And so other people are getting down because of this. I'm getting up because of this. I don't think things are falling apart. I think things are coming together. And so I hurt when other people hurt. I just want people to let the fear, let the pain, turn them to Jesus, turn to God. Ask Jesus to forgive you of your sins. Put your faith and trust in him, that he suffered, bled, and died, was buried, rose again, ascended in heaven, coming again. Be ready for that time. And I thank you for tuning me in for my very first podcast. And if you found my podcast to be a blessing, you can help me immensely by clicking the little like button. I've heard this 1,000 times. Now it's my turn to say it. Even more, you can help me by sharing it with others, with friends, and even more by subscribing to this. There's no cost of that forever. But see, when the podcast gurus see that my numbers go up and go up quickly, hopefully, they'll respond by making me more visible and more findable, and that you'll help me to get the word of God out. So my plans are to have a weekly podcast go up on Friday afternoons with news updates in light of Bible prophecy, kind of like today. Then in addition, I hope to put up my the Duke Meister's greatest hits. I'll be sharing a series of teaching, number one for seekers. We know that if you seek, you'll find. How do we know the Bible is the Word of God? I'll have a whole series for seekers, a series for newbies, my discipleship program that I put together here over the years. And so the Duke Meister's greatest hits. And I hope that'll be a blessing to you. Preach the gospel 24/7 through this medium. And I'm grateful that you had a part. So huge thanks for listening. Comments welcome. Comments needed. Help guide me through this new season of my life. As always, eyes on Jesus, not on man. Hands at the plow. Have a great day. Jesus loves you.